Once the Venerable Ananda, who was not only the Buddha's cousin, but also his devoted attendant for 25 years, spoke to the Buddha and said, "Sir, a good friend is half of the holy life." And the Buddha said, "Do not say so, Ananda. A good friend is the whole of the holy life." Ananda wanted to express his idea and his conviction that a good friend was giving at least the half of his spiritual growth and his spiritual activity. The Buddha said, no, it's not only half, it's all of it. Now, a good friend, in the way that the Buddha talked about it, is called the Kalyanamitta, which is usually meant to be someone who already has stepped ahead on a spiritual growth activity and can help one. A teacher, a meditation teacher, a monk, a nun, or anyone who takes spiritual growth seriously, not as a sort of in-between hobby or something to read about or try out all the different possibilities here, there, and everywhere, but a serious undertaking to grow and expand one's consciousness. To have a good friend who helps one on this path is, according to the Buddha, not only the whole of it, but it is also the deterrent against our difficulties. Now, the Buddha spoke about five particular difficulties, the five hindrances, which beset all of us. We are all beset by these five to a greater or lesser degree. The degree difference is extremely small. And they are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and skeptical doubt. A lot could be said about them, but what I want to refer to is the fact that the Buddha gives different antidotes against these difficulties, these diseases that we have. But one antidote is the same for all five of them: noble friends and noble conversations. That is the same antidote, the same medicine for all five. Now, you can see how important that is already from these two statements. And then there's another very famous discourse by the Buddha, the Mahamangala Sutta, which is recited and chanted and discussed ever so often wherever Buddhists are together. And it also starts out with, "Not with fools company keeping, but with the wise ever consorting." So here we have instructions, but how to follow them? Where do we find wise people? Where do we find a Kalyanamitta, a noble friend who is taking the steps on the spiritual growth seriously? Where do we find someone who will help us to go along? The help that we need is absolutely essential. In ourselves, there is a lack of discernment of the underlying truth. It's not possible any other way. Human beings are made that way, otherwise the world wouldn't look the way it does. And this lack of discernment is something which throws us off the path all the time. We find everything else more important. Everything that needs to be done out there takes priority over our own spiritual growth, over the time spent in meditation, over the time spent in reading the words of spiritual masters, whoever they are, over the time spent in noble conversation. Everything else is first. If should there be any time left, maybe like today on a Sunday afternoon, then we can once in a while pay attention to this. Very essential and absolutely necessary direction to uplift our own minds and hearts. Yet it should be the other way around. So our first consideration is, how can we really be a noble friend to ourselves? How can we, without looking everywhere for someone which we may not be able to find or where we don't recognize it, how do we first become our own best friend? And that would be a consideration which would make it possible for us to at least get started properly. The first step is to know our own priorities, what's most important. And if we find it difficult to really make a judgment, it is very helpful to take pencil and paper and write down all the things we want to do, and then cross them out one after another as we find out that one is just as unimportant as the next, until we are left with the essentials, with the absolute essentials, which would include making enough money to eat, cleaning up the house so that it isn't in a mess, having some physical exercise, and what else? Then comes the question, are we really a friend to ourselves? Are we really knowing what's good for us? If we want to be our own good friend, we've got to know what's really good for us. So maybe instead of thinking what I should do, maybe what would we advise our own best friend to do? And put that down on paper. What do we think is really important in this life? How long do we think this life's going to last? Do we have any idea? Nobody's got any ideas. Nobody knows. So if it is so uncertain how long we're going to be around, what do we do with that time that we have absolutely no control over? We have no control over this time that's left to us. So how do we use it? If we find a proper direction, then we have to figure out what's our own priority, what's most important to do, what do we do first. And if we do find out that it is important to find happiness within, then it may stand to reason that we start the day with trying to do that instead of with all the other things that we do at the beginning of the day. The very first thing in the morning, to sit down and meditate. Meditation would be the means of calming the mind, purifying the mind, doing something for the mind what we usually do for the body. After having had a good night's sleep which rested the body, then do something for the mind. Maybe if it is quite clear now in ourselves that this is important, that this is an important thing to do and has priority, maybe we can manage to get up half an hour earlier and an hour earlier and do it. I mean, even though it's cold outside, the houses are well heated. It's no big hardship to get up. I tried this morning. I was up at 5 o'clock. It's no problem at all. It's even light outside. In fact, I thought it was 8 o'clock because there's no darkness. It's quite all right to get up. So what we can do is to not find out how to indulge ourselves more, which is usually the idea, how to be one's own best friend, but how to use wisdom to make ourselves happy, peaceful, and find within ourselves the truth which underlies everything. The Buddha said, "The whole of the universe, O monks, lies in this fathom-long body." One fathom, an old-fashioned way of measuring. What do you use? A meter and centimeters, huh? A meter 80 or something. The whole of the universe is to be found within. There's nothing without that isn't within also. So if we are a little more sure of our direction, we can at least have that kind of determination. It's essential to have a determination and to have a direction. If life is without direction, it's purposeless. And purposelessness doesn't induce one to happiness. And purposelessness doesn't help one to understand why there's unhappiness coupled with happiness, even though all the exterior things may be quite all right. Every exterior problem seems to be solved. Everything works with push buttons, but inside nothing works with push buttons. It's got to be worked for. So if we know what's good for us, then we act like a friend towards ourselves, and a friend who admonishes, who is a person within ourselves who says, come on, get up, do your meditation. And a friend who says, it's not necessary to have more or to become something, but it is necessary to let go more. The more we let go, the easier life becomes. Whatever we carry around is a burden. If we take a trip and we have a lot of heavy luggage, it's extremely burdensome. If we let go of that stuff, it becomes lighter and lighter. Ramana Maharshi, who was a sage in southern India, he died around 1950, he compared it like this. He said, people get on a train with some heavy suitcase, and instead of putting it in the luggage rack, they stand in this train and carry the suitcase all the way. Extremely burdensome. Now, we're all on a journey. We're on a journey from birth to death. That's our journey. We can go off to the North Pole or the South Pole. We're still on the same journey. It's from birth to death. That we can't escape. Now, on this journey, we're carrying around a lot of heavy burdens. The heavy burdens of the problems that we think we ought to solve. They're not solvable. Just leave them alone. It's the best thing to do with them. There's nothing to solve. The only thing that is happiness producing is if we let go of our resistance to whatever it is we don't like. So if we have an idea that it is important to be a friend to ourselves, we must make sure that we also know, why does our unhappiness arise? Why does our dislike arise? Why are we not satisfied? Where is the cause of it all? Now, we can do that in our mind. We can also do it on a piece of paper. I've always found that people who take pencil and paper to do this are more seriously involved and get better answers. It is another crutch to use. When we use the mind, being as unruly as it is, it goes from one subject to the next, discursive thinking. It's been doing this discursive thinking for the past 20, 30, 40, 50 years. It can't get out of the habit that quick. But if we use pencil and paper, we are fairly forced to keep on the subject. So if we want to keep on that subject of how can we actually befriend ourselves so that it makes a difference in our lives, it's very useful to write down, what is the cause? How do we get unhappy? What was the last unhappiness we experienced? Why was it caused? How did it disappear? Every answer we get requires another question. There's only one bottom line, but we may not get to it. That one bottom line is always spelled E-G-O, ego. But we may not get to that. Doesn't matter, whatever answer we get. In other words, when we are really interested in having a life which is harmonious, peaceful, meaningful, purposeful, we need to see where we get off the track, where our desires lead us astray. The desires are so manifold that they do that all the time. So we need to get back on track. Getting back on track means that we realize again there's only one person in the whole world that can make us happy or unhappy, and that's ourselves. There is nobody else involved. I like to compare that with one of those toys that children play with. I think you probably know it too. It's a little box, little cardboard box or wooden box, and inside is a spring, and on the spring sits a little doll, and there's got a lid, the box got a lid. And when the child touches the lid, the little doll jumps up, because it's sitting on a spring and it's been pushed down by the lid. Now somebody comes along and pulls out this doll. And then the child comes and touches the lid, nothing happens. So then the child comes and brings a hammer and hammers on the lid, and still nothing happens. The doll is gone, it can't jump out. Whatever's in here, that jumps out. Everything else is just the trigger. It only depends on what we've got in here. It's got nothing to do with out there. And that's the first step on the spiritual path, on the spiritual journey. Unless we take that step, the spiritual journey doesn't exist. Because it's always something out there that either touches the lid or hammers on it. And as long as greed and hate, which means wanting and not wanting, desiring, wishing and hoping, the resisting and disliking is inside here, it will jump out. It can't do anything else. It's sitting on a little spring. Anybody touches upon it, and out it comes. Now, immediately, of course, when we realize this, we can't pull out that, what's sitting in there, naturally. It's going to keep on jumping out until finally one day we have practiced long enough so that it doesn't jump out anymore. But the difference between a person who practices meditation and a spiritual discipline and a person that doesn't practice anything is that when it does jump out, the hate, the dislike, the resistance, the rejection, or the passion, the one who practices knows it's me that's reacting, doesn't think it's somebody out there that's doing it. And that is the fundamental difference between being a friend to oneself or an enemy to oneself. Because we cannot possibly change the world to the point where it will no longer touch upon us. One of the descriptions of an arahant, a fully enlightened one, also in the Mahamangala Sutta is, although touched by worldly circumstance, never his mind is moving. The mind never moves, the reaction doesn't happen, but that worldly circumstance touch upon him or her. So it isn't all that happens out there, it's what happens in here. To be one's own best friend means that we realize that. That's our starting point. This is where we begin. It is the one essential qualification for not only being one's own friend, but also for growth. And if we don't use this human life for the purpose of growing, we're wasting our time. What are we here for? It's very important to discuss this with oneself. What are we here for? What's the idea? I mean, we're not staying very long. Are we here to enjoy ourselves? Are we here to make a nuisance of ourselves? Are we here to amass a fortune? What are we here for? What's the use of it all? Are we here to stay healthy? I mean, it's impossible. We're going to die anyway, no matter what we do. So it's very important to find out what is the reason. It's a growth process, which in the beginning, from the day we are born until about 20 years of age, is a physical one, of course a mental one also, but in the physical one we can see it. Then, when the body stops growing, we think we're grown up, which is of course a mistaken view. We are nothing like it. We are just have a fully grown body. But this is when the real work starts, and the sooner the better. Unfortunately, it's an age, the young age, when most of the ideas are not along those lines, so we have to start a little later. It doesn't matter whenever we start. So if we really realize that this is what we're here for a growth process, then we can see that it's all happening within. If we are our own best friend, we want to get rid of our inner enemies and want to cultivate those qualities within us that are friendly to us, supportive of us. Now, inner qualities that are contrary to our well-being are the ones that are connected with greed and hate. Desiring, one can think, oh, I'm not very greedy, I don't eat too much, and I don't want new things all the time. But that's not all that there is to greed. Greed is that sensuality that wants the pleasantness. It doesn't mean we shouldn't have any. It's a sensuality that one is looking for the pleasantness. When it comes, it's fine, but the looking for it. And the hate is that feeling within us which we all know. Anger, upset, dislike. Sometimes also it is directed towards oneself. That particular quality, hatefulness, anything that's negative in that direction, is particularly upsetting to people, and they'd love to get rid of it. Without realizing that it's just the other side of the same coin. Hate and greed are the two sides of the same coin. We may have more of one than the other. We usually do. Usually people have one more of one than the other. But we need to get rid of a little bit of each in order to make any difference. Now those people, the Buddha said, who are full of dislikes and hates and resentments and rejections, worries and fears, which are all part of this hate process, are much harder to live with, find themselves much more unpleasant, but are much easier to train. Why? Because they feel so unpleasant that they definitely want to get rid of those qualities. They are not happy. And they see the world as an unhappy place that is constantly besetting them with some unfortunate situation. Now they want to get rid of that. They want to become happy. the person who is more inclined towards desiring, wanting, and having pleasant sense experiences is a person who is behaving much less blameworthy, but is much harder to train, because that particular quality creates a fair bit of pleasure. And such a person has a fair bit of pleasure within them, and so isn't so keen on getting rid of it. In fact, don't even realize that there's something to get rid of. So if we are a person that has a lot of resentment and a lot of rejection, a lot of worries, fears, and all these worries and fears and resentments are playing havoc with our emotional peace and inner security, then it's not so difficult to become our own best friend, because we know we want to get rid of that. If we are a person who is enjoying all the pleasures of the senses, then the question arises, well, why not? And the next sentence usually is, I only live once. That person is harder to train, whoever we are. If we want to get to be a real noble friend to ourselves, we have to look at our own faults. The formula for that is recognition, no blame, change. Blaming oneself is part of hate. Blaming oneself means also blaming others. It all goes together. But it isn't a matter of praise or blame. It's a matter of recognition. It's a matter of recognition what makes one unhappy, and then, having recognized it, accepting it as part of being a human being, and then changing it. Now that means being one's own best friend. Recognition, no blame, change. What we can carry around with us as our support system are the four roads to success, which I mentioned yesterday, which are love and compassion, joy with others, and equanimity. The four emotions which bring peace and harmony to oneself. Which means that if we recognize we are lacking any of them, that recognition makes it possible for us to change, substitute. If we think someone else is at fault, we can't practice, because someone else may not be practicing. Someone else may be totally uninterested in what we are doing. If someone else is triggering our hates, we should be thankful to realize that they're sitting in there, and a certain thing is a button that is being pushed, and we can get rid of those buttons. We don't have to have all these buttons sticking out that people can push, or situations can push, or whoever is pushing what. Now, when we realize all these things about ourselves, we have a system, we have a working path, we have a kamatana, which is a working system that we can use to work on our own growth. Now, if we don't fall into the error of blaming ourselves for anything that's wrong, but have a distinct and definite knowledge that all that's necessary is to change, and that change is possible, then nothing stands in the way. It's slow. It needs patience, perseverance, and meditation. And if our days are full of this and that, another thing that is very important to put down on a piece of paper is when we can have extra time for contemplation. Wisdom is not something that one can read about. It's also not something that anybody can teach anybody. Wisdom is an inner arising of the inner vision, which can be then translated into the knowing, the understood experience. Wisdom comes from nothing else except from an understood experience. If we don't have time, or think we don't have time, during the day, to watch our inner experiences, we'll never understand them, and we'll never change them. So time is necessary for that. Bed is one of the worst places one can be in, because most people die in bed. So it's just as well to get out of it. And to get out of it early in the morning and do something about this extra time that one has. Meditation is one aspect, contemplation is another. I'll explain contemplation briefly. It means that one takes a subject, not a problem, but a subject, which has universal application, such as impermanence, and tries to relate it to oneself, relate it to one's inner being, to one's physical and one's mental makeup. This is only one possibility. One can take death, one can take birth, one can take whichever universal subject that is not just strictly an individual idea, but something which applies everywhere. One can take peace, one can take love, anything that one is interested in. These are universal subjects. If we stick to, for instance, impermanence, then relate it to oneself and see, can I find anything within me that's permanent, that is solid, has a core substance, that I can rely on totally, where there's no change, where it remains forever the same, where it's like a rock that I can really rely on and sit on. Can I find anything like that? And if we find something, inquire again, is that really it? Is it the body or is it the mind? Which one is unchanging? Which one is really there? And if we can't find anything, relate that result to one's way that one looks at oneself and the world. To be one's own friend means that one changes one's attention that one pays to oneself and the world around one to a different standpoint. It is like this. If I'm sitting now and I'm looking out of a window, I get a certain view. But if I stand up and look out of the same window, I get a different view. And this is what happens if one practices. One practices one's own inner growth. One gets a different view. A different view of oneself, a different view of the world. And this means that one is really interested in having a meaningful life. A life that has the substance in it, which is then translated into also one's relationship to others. A life of meaning and a life of real spiritual growth needs to have that. Yes. Bye-bye. We need a lot of inquiry into ourselves, which is done through contemplation, which needs that extra time we take out of a busy day, of a schedule which seems to leave no time for anything other than the physical and the sensual enjoyment and the physical and sensual attention. We must remember that we are not just body and that we are not just the senses. We are far more than that. The body and the senses are only the outer trappings. There is heart and mind, which have a much greater importance. And heart and mind, which in the Buddhist language is one anyway, but in English we do have to make two out of it. In the Buddhist language, mind contains the feelings, but we usually think of the mind as thinking and the heart as feeling. If we pay attention to that and become imbued with the understanding that this is where our most important life lies, then it means a kind of friendship towards ourselves which has nobility in it. And this is a way of a spiritual practitioner. Now, if we can find outside friends, that will be also very helpful. But if we are not a friend to ourselves, it will be much harder to find others of equal status, because birds of a feather flock together. If we are a person who has the noble intention and friendliness towards ourselves, we will find others who are like that. But if we're only interested in the ordinary, everyday, pedestrian way of living, that's the kind of friends we'll have. So if we want to have, as the Buddha advised, the wise and noble friends and be together with wise and noble people, then it is absolutely essential that we are such a person also, to a certain degree, whatever degree is possible. Because otherwise we won't even meet those people. And if we meet them, we won't recognize them. And even if we recognize them, there will be no connection. That's why it said, only a Buddha knows a Buddha. We can always recognize everything below, but nothing above. So we have to have a certain inner vibration and a certain inner practice already in order to have those noble friends. And as I was using Ananda as an example when I started speaking, now Ananda was a very noble person, but he was not enlightened. When he was speaking to the Buddha at that time, he was possibly on the first step of enlightenment, but not fully enlightened. So he couldn't see the whole of the truth, which the Buddha then corrected him. But he was enough enlightened so that he could see that he needed the Buddha to be his friend, his noble friend. And we can find the same if we have that intention within, we will find those people that are on the same aspiration, have the same aspirations as we have, and they will be helpful to us. But it does not substitute for being one's own best friend, because if we are not our own best friend, we will not do this inner work. We will still think that it is out there that we can get it, and we will look at the world and think they must give it because it is there, so why am I not getting this happiness? But when we are starting to look inside, we realize happiness and unhappiness are only of our own making. We are the makers of it, and we are the recipients of it. The inner life is all we know. Everybody has a different kind of inner life, and all we know is our own. We can't look into somebody else. We can get an idea if they make an unfriendly face that they are unhappy, but that's all we know. Or if they make a happy face that they are happy, that's all we know about it. But our own inner life is the world we live in, and that world looks entirely different for everybody. We each have our own world to live in, and if we are not our own friend, we won't tidy that world up. So that process of making our world the best possible world to live in happens within. And each one needs to do that particular work on themselves. And it is totally independent of outer circumstance, apart from starvation, which is highly unlikely around here, or such physical disability that the mental capacities are impaired, either one or both. Other than that, everybody can do this. And it means that we have seen one part of reality. We've seen the reality of ourselves being the only ones that can make this inner world happen. The outer world will never be satisfactory. Everything is available and nothing satisfies. You can get a new one and a better one, and again, it doesn't satisfy. It's impossible to find it. So, with that idea in mind, maybe there is an understanding of the fact that meditation is an essential part of happy living because of the fact that meditation is the only way that the mind can ever rise above all that which touches upon us and besets us from the world around us. Meditation alone is not enough. It needs the support system of our daily inquiry into ourselves, the attention, the mindfulness, which I spoke about yesterday, which means we know ourselves. We have an idea of what we are and how we react. All these things are like a picture puzzle, little separate pieces which all fit together into one picture, a one whole. The word holy means being whole. It doesn't mean wearing a robe. Being whole is being holy. And there, we all have the same chance, and it makes for that what everybody wants, and hardly anybody gets, complete peace of mind. I like to stop now and give you a chance to ask some questions, and possibly we have a chance to do it.